Thanks for doing your part to financially support your public radio station. Today on Travel with Rick Steves, we're taking some time to learn about ourselves. We're finding new ways to enjoy and understand even familiar places. Moses Gates specializes in this kind of travel. He's the author of Hidden Cities, and he's a licensed New York City tour guide who likes to explore his city in a way you might agree is a bit unorthodox.
When I'm off the clock in terms of being a tour guide, climbing bridges is an absolutely amazing experience. It's something where you walk across bridges all the time. Everybody knows what the Brooklyn Bridge is, or the George Washington Bridge, or the Queensboro Bridge. You see it in the opening credits of TV shows, you see it in movies, and you feel like you know these kind of structures, and especially if you're a New Yorker, you feel a certain ownership of them, and you want to see as much as you can. You want to see them from the walkway, and you also want to see them from the top. There's been a whole bunch of movies where people have climbed the cables of the Brooklyn Bridge, and I remember watching those and thinking, I wonder what that's like. So a lot of it's just satisfying your own curiosity and also having a real personal interaction with the city you love. But when you're on top, the amazing part is how removed and how connected you are to the city both at the same time. You're sitting there on this narrow little spire of metal. The Manhattan Bridge, when you're on top of the Manhattan Bridge, you can, if you're reasonably tall, you can lie down lengthwise, stretch your arms out, and touch both sides of the bridge. It's that narrow on top. It's so ephemeral, and you're 300 feet up in the air. So you're attached to the city only by this tiny little metal shard that's rising hundreds of feet above the water and then attached to the city by this, you know, narrow span to its shore.
And there's no railing? It's just a platform.
No, they do not have a
I'm
safety
thinking like
up
a normal
there.
Tourist.
Maybe they should. I don't know.
And physically, do you have to have a grappling hook to get over the barrier, or can you just step around it and then it's just wide open? You just hang onto the railing and walk to the very top of the bridge? Or how demanding is it?
Well, it really depends on who you are. You have to remember that these are human-made structures and maintained by humans, and as such, need to have human access to them. The bridge workers need a way to get on top of the bridge.
Let's put it
like that. So it's not anything that, well, usually it's not anything that's an insane climb. There was one time when we went and climbed the Queensboro that I almost fell, but generally speaking, that was not the normal way. But generally speaking, it's not something my grandmother could do, but I would say it's something a reasonably athletic person who's not afraid of heights and has balance mm-hmm. wouldn't be that troubled by. I do not recommend it, just to let you know.
Take us underneath. What is the biggest thrill for you as an urban explorer underneath the streets of New York?
So the biggest thrill is just seeing things with your own eyes that you've either heard about and never thought you could see, or just discover when you're there. A lot of times, the underground of the city or the abandoned corners of the city are the only part that hasn't been redeveloped in a long time, and it's the only part where you will see history that hasn't been painted over or chipped away or redeveloped or something like that, especially in a city like New York that's constantly changing and constantly being updated and constantly having history painted over and destroyed.
It's a time tunnel experience.
In a way, it is.
That's New York guide and urban explorer Moses Gates. Author Paul Theroux has spent decades traveling to far-flung places. He chronicles his arduous adventures in books like Dark Star Safari and The Great Railway Bazaar. He wrote Deep South about a journey he took closer to home, but in some ways it was a world away from the America he lives in.
It does seem remote. It seems different. It seems itself. And I'm thinking of the rural South, not the cities. The Deep South for me begins in South Carolina. You know, it's a day and a half drive from my home on Cape Cod, a long day to Virginia, and then a day or so to South Carolina. South Carolina, Georgia, Alabama, Mississippi, Arkansas, and the northern part of Louisiana, and not cities. Nashville is a lovely city. Birmingham is nice. Tuscaloosa, Atlanta, they're all great. But I was in the rural areas, and the rural areas retain the southernness much more than the cities do.
I had a sense reading through your book that it wasn't a list of great sights. It didn't seem like you had a sightseeing agenda. It was more meandering and getting to know the people.
You know, I've never been a sightseer. I avoided antebellum mansions and Civil War battlefields. I saw them, but I didn't write about them. To me, they didn't hold as much interest as what I think of as human architecture. I mean, the antebellum, the superfluous amplitudes of the great southern colonnaded house is wonderful. But when you talk to someone who has a story, there's a book. You know, there's the, that's the essence of a journey, I think.
How did you get people to open up and talk and really share and get intimate?
Well, several ways. People don't open up in the States. We are very averse to personal questions. We are full of opinions. They'll tell you what they want to tell you. But when you ask the kind of question that you would ask the average Indian, Gujarati in India, or, you know, a Kenyan, you cannot ask an American, how many children do you have? How much money do you make? Where do you work? Where do you live? They'll say, what are you, writing a book? Are you from the government? You know, you really have to make friends. And once you've kind of gained some trust, people will be forthcoming. I found the stories amazing. It's not so much personal history, it's national history. It's the way that people are involved in the civil rights movement, in farming, in sharecropping, in poverty. I mean, the rural South is very poor. The cities don't show it. Go to Atlanta, you think, oh, this is a great place. Or Tuscaloosa, you say, this is wonderful. Go a few miles south of Tuscaloosa, maybe 15, 20 miles south of Tuscaloosa, and you're in the area of Let Us Now Praise Famous Men, that James Agee book from late 1930s. And it looks much the same. There are plenty of well-wishers, plenty of people trying to help out there and with housing and welfare. But the city, or the town of Greensboro, Moundville, are still locked somewhat in the 1930s, and the houses still stand. They're very poor. There's not much work. Same is true of Mississippi, up Highway 61. So your question is, how do you get to people to talk to them? I hang around. Don't look like a tourist. Don't presume. You know, it's not a TV show where you show up and stick a microphone in their face and say, you know, I got a camera here. Will you talk to me? It's much more oblique way of showing up, and might mean just sitting around and shooting the breeze for a day or two or longer.
You wrote this, the goodwill was like an embrace. What does that mean?
I felt like one of the family. People are very accepting and they're very inclusive. And if they trust you, white or black in the South, you're not one of them, but they will take you aboard. And they have great manners. They have this habit that you find in other countries of feeding you, welcoming you in the house. I had this experience again and again of you get along with them and they say, come over and eat.
Yeah. So you didn't feel like a rich New England voyeur?
No, I am a rich New England voyeur, but passing myself off as a vagabond. But no, I'm just a bespectacled senior writer, I suppose. But I was treated, I think, very well, and in fact, treated as an equal, which you can't ask for more than that.
That's writer Paul Theroux talking about the kindness he encountered on a road trip through the American South. Whenever I travel, I come home with a renewed sense of kinship with our human family, people who live far from me and see things differently than I do. It's the same experience you can get from listening to public radio. This station brings us the voices of real people, voices worth hearing, voices worth learning from. These are our neighbors from all around the planet, and public radio brings them right into your living room or kitchen or commuting with you on the drive to work. As you know, getting to know people and cultures from around the world is more than just fascinating and entertaining. It's also very important. Since you listen to Travel with Rick Steves, I'm going to go out on a limb and guess that you already share my passion for the mission of public radio. You appreciate the importance of taking the time to get a smarter look at our world. If you haven't done so yet, I'd like to ask you to take a moment right now and lend your financial support. Find an amount that works for you and then give us a call. Make a difference for your public radio station. It just takes a few minutes. It's easy, it's fun, and it really does make a difference. Public radio gives us perspectives on the world that we just don't often find on the rest of the dial. Your membership in your local public radio station allows Travel with Rick Steves to return each week to keep sharing these perspectives with you and your neighbors. Let's keep getting smarter together by supporting this public radio station. Please give us a call or go online right now. We're counting on you.